Oh no! Welcome back. The Lakers did it again. They get run off the court by an overly athletic team, especially compared to the Lakers. Get crushed by the Pistons. Collapse in the fourth quarter. We've got a lot to talk about here on the Lakers Collective. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jason Tipp, Jovan Buha. Guys, Happy New Year. 2025 coming to an end. 2026 coming in. Happy to see you guys here.
It's not going to be a fun new year until we get to February either because of the Austin injury and whatever trades coming. So I feel like it's going to be just an extension of 2025 for another month. But it's good to see you guys. It's good to be back here in Colorado. I'm excited to dive into it today.
Yeah, shout out to the chat. Happy New Year, everybody. And you know, hopefully it's a better start to the year than the close to this one.
I don't know about you guys. I woke up angry. Like the moment my eyes were open this morning, I was annoyed. It was like carried over from last night's game. That was about as frustrating of a game as I've seen. To me, it really felt like, and there's a lot of things that we're going to get into, but the Lakers, they ran three quarters of the race. They got to the fourth quarter, maybe even the last few minutes of the third, and then they just went, nah, okay, let's go ahead and walk across the finish line rather than run through the tape. About as frustrated as I've been with this team after last night's loss to the Pistons, that fourth quarter, an absolute disaster. Where are you guys at on this fine final day of 2025?
I actually have a little bit of a different perspective. I thought that the Lakers played pretty poorly most of the night. They were just getting upheld by a couple of statistical categories. They were getting to the foul line a ton. Luka kept getting Asar Thompson, catching him, reaching in, and just kind of getting like little grifty. But that's basically Luka's successful form of offense right now is kind of grifting along the lane lines on his drives. And he was able to get there quite a bit. LeBron caught Cade Cunningham reaching in at the three-point line and was able to just kind of throw his arms in there and grab an attempt to the foul line. I think the Lakers outscored the Pistons. It was like 15-6, I think, in second chance points. Like, if there's one thing you want to grab as a silver lining from the last couple of games, the level of defensive engagement and intensity has picked up, basically. Yep. Aside from DeAndre Ayton, he's been the one guy who's kind of stuck out, who I know we're going to talk about tonight. But the forwards and the guys that were not kind of carrying their water defensively have played a little bit better over the last couple of games. That allowed them to stay somewhat close, but really a shot quality dynamic that was there all game tilted heavily towards Detroit when they got into the fourth quarter. And then, frankly, as soon as things started to decompose a little bit, I thought LeBron and Luka both were just atrocious taking care of the basketball in that fourth quarter, just throwing like pick six turnovers that were leading the other way. I want to save it for when we get into the LeBron and Luka segment, but just those two guys in general, I thought didn't do a good enough job kind of running the offense to help keep control of the game where they can. I mean, ultimately the roster is what the roster is at this point, and that's not changing until we get to early February. And so it's kind of like, as a practical matter, those guys have to be better than they've been, which I know we'll talk about in a little bit.
I would say that in terms of the Lakers winning in second chance points, you can't get a second chance if you don't miss the first shot. That was the problem with Detroit. They were insanely efficient from the field. That's certainly something we'll talk about when we get to the Lakers defense. But Jovan, how are you doing?
So I'll start with the positive, just to be a little positive here before we get into everything else. So I actually liked the shift with the starting group. Surprise, surprise. I thought having a couple of defenders in that starting group, just the general activity with Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia through that first shift. Marcus had a couple steals. Jake had a steal and a block. There were several times they rotated on drives or got back in transition. And I thought you saw a level of effort and engagement and urgency from those two in particular that made a real impact with the starting group. So they ended up being a zero in their 12 minutes together, the starting group, which honestly is a positive compared to how bad the starting group has been in these specific matchups, going back to like the Houston game or the OKC game or the San Antonio, Phoenix, whatever. They've been a double digit negative in those performances. So for them to be a zero, as crazy as it sounds, is actually a positive based on prior results. So I want to acknowledge that I think there can be something moving forward of we've been talking about like two offensive players, two banshees, two defenders and a center. I think that needs to be more the lineup construction moving forward. And I also thought The offensive organization for they completely collapsed in the fourth quarter, but through the first three quarters, I thought there was a lot to like about just running more sets, and that has been something that we've seen a real tick up in terms of the last couple of games. Now it only resulted in 106 points because of the turnovers and the shot making, and there can still be some better things. Like, Detroit is a team that ices a lot, they hedge a lot, and we didn't see LA quite capitalize on the 4-on-3, 3-on-2 opportunities that they were capitalizing on earlier in the season at a much higher rate when teams would blitz or trap or whatnot. So those overall, though, I think were a couple of positives of, like, it was tied midway through the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, from that point on, they got outscored 49-27 over the final 18 minutes of this game. And that's where I will shift to some of the negatives. This stat blew my mind coming off of last night's game. Detroit made 37 two-point field goals. All 37 of those two-point field goals were in the paint, and most of them were within 5 feet of the rim. And that, it was just like basically a layup line for the entire game. I thought it was the Lakers' worst rim protection game by far this season, which is saying something for a group that ranks 26th in defensive rating. And I want to highlight specifically DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes. I know we will touch on them in a little bit, but I thought there was a lot of positive with Marcus and Jake and Vando. I thought this was one of Vando's better games overall, and he made a real impact on the glass, hit a couple threes and whatnot. I thought those guys were largely doing their jobs and funneling guys to the right spots and switching and being active in the passing lanes. It was just once they got by the perimeter guys or once those guys shaded them toward a certain area, it was just layup after layup against DeAndre Ayton, against Jackson Hayes. Those guys were just not physical. We're not a presence. We're not contesting well. They were giving up reverse layups. It was a mess defensively. So that was really discouraging. And that to me is maybe the most discouraging thing of it. Just felt like those guys got punched in the mouth by Detroit collectively, and they both sort of wilted. So, I mean, we could go through a bunch of other things, but the Lakers continue to have an alarmingly low floor, and that is really concerning right now.
Yeah, this now continues the trend of every time they've lost, it's been in blowout fashion by double digits. And to your point about the rim protection issue, the Detroit Pistons were the 97th percentile shooting at the rim against the Lakers. Now, the Lakers were not bad there themselves. They were in the 98th percentile shooting at the rim against Detroit. However, in terms of shot volume, the Lakers were in the 10th percentile at the rim, Detroit 90th. Percentile. They got everything right at the bucket and converted at a very, very, very high rate there. Jason, you know, after the game, JJ Redick lamented that the Lakers have still not figured out what their identity is. Mamba mentality says good enough to beat bad teams, but not good teams. Is that simply now ingrained into their identity? It feels like they're proving a lot of the critics right with the way they've played over the last, their four losses in the last five games. They've spent a lot of time proving the people that were saying it was fool's gold correct.
You know, it's complicated for me because, again, like there's just such a huge gap in the level of shot creation they were getting at the start of the season versus what they're getting now. And, like, you know, honestly, the issues with the Lakers roster have been there the whole time. The issues with athleticism, the issues with consistency in their defensive execution, all that kind of stuff. Guys struggling to knock down catch and shoot threes. That was also an issue early in the year. By the way, in this 5-6 stretch, they're shooting just 33% from three. And that is the fourth worst mark in the entire league at this point. And right now, the Lakers are averaging for the entire season just 7.5 made catch and shoot threes per game, which is the worst in the entire NBA. There are 19 teams in the NBA that make at least 10 per game. And the Lakers are in last place at 7.5. Those issues have always been there. The difference is early in the season, Austin Reeves was available and playing awesome every night. Mm-hmm. And Luka Doncic was playing at a higher level. Luka, before he went to Slovenia, was shooting 60% on twos. That's fallen off of a cliff. Since he went to Slovenia, he's shooting 42% from the field and below 30% from three. Last night, guys, the Detroit Pistons scored 19 points directly in transition off of missed Luka threes and turnovers, where when he takes that step back three off the top and he lets Jalen Duren run right past him and it's kick ahead, Jalen Duren dunk, or he throws a pick six turnover on the left wing that leads to Marcus Sasser dropping it off to Isaiah Thomas or Isaiah Stewart for a dunk. Literally 19 points for the Pistons, just gift wrapped to them off of pick six turnovers in bad step back threes off the top of the key. Like, what has happened is there's been a complete like chasm drop off in their top end shot creation, because LeBron's not close to as good as Austin was to start the season as a pick and roll player and as an ISO player generating shots. And Luka's not the same guy he was to start the season. And what that's done is it's shined this gigantic spotlight on an issue that's always been there. And that's why, like, when I talk about these issues, there's kind of like two different ways to look at it. There's like the, what do you do with the roster issues? Like, Rob Pelinka is screwed this up, for lack of a better term, over the last 5 years, and he's left this roster utterly devoid of the two things you need in modern basketball: shooting and athleticism. That's a real problem. That's going to take multiple cycles to fix, though, whether it's Rob or whether it's someone else. And so as a practical matter, this is the roster, and the only way they're going to be able to compete with this version of the roster is by getting more out of Luka and getting more out of LeBron, and by getting Austin healthy and getting him back out there creating shots. Like, you know, the stuff about Ayton, and you could see it screaming off of the tape. Like, he could not keep Cade Cunningham in front in a drop coverage. Like, how does that happen? Like, how is it that in a drop where you're like giving ground, you're allowing Cade to turn the corner? Like, that can't happen. At the very least, you got to keep him in front and make him shoot over you or shoot through you, or like, it just in general, Ayton has been a non-factor at the rim defensively. I thought Jovan laid that out really well. So it's like, there's certain things, though. Like, are we expecting DeAndre Ayton to turn into a monster to turn this thing around? Like, I think that's kind of just the reality of what this Lakers team is. An Ayton that's going to do well in some matchups on some nights, but that's going to struggle when he goes up against better competition and probably get outplayed by most of the centers in the league. And so as a practical matter, the one thing that can save the Lakers between now and the deadline is getting better play out of LeBron and Luka.
Is that, Jovan, is that something that is in the cards? I think the LeBron-Luka pairing so far, and due to injury, there's not a lot of experience with the two of them together on the floor. Is it reasonable for the LeBron-Luka pairing to improve here? I think the Austin-Luka pairing has looked much more natural and comfortable than the LeBron-Luka pairing at this point. And with Austin out for, I'm not figuring to see him until sometime around the All-Star break, whether that's on either side of it. Can LeBron and Luka figure things out and improve their play enough to keep the Lakers afloat? Or are we just, it was a long December. Are we in for a long January here?
I think we're in for a long January against the good teams, right? I think they'll be competitive against Memphis. I think they'll probably beat New Orleans in New Orleans, but then they'll play San Antonio on the second night of a back-to-back and almost certainly lose that game and probably lose it by double digits. That is a pretty tough back-to-back. But I think the LeBron-Luka pairing will improve, just because I think these two guys are great enough and smart enough and skilled enough where I just don't think it can be much worse than it's been up to this point in the season, and just through continuity or watching film or practicing or some combination of all of that, they will adjust. And I think we've seen some progress, right? Like, I think the two-man game, when they run it, has been better, and we've seen different actions in terms of getting those two guys in the post and horns actions, stack actions, etc. That it feels like it stops and starts with those two, and I don't know how much of that is on the two stars in particular and them just not wanting to do maybe certain things that lean into that, you know, combination more, or is it the coaching staff and them not instilling and sort of spamming some of these actions more? But it does feel like we'll see a game where they look better together, and then we'll see a couple games where they take a step back. And then again, it's like progress and then stalling, progress and stalling. So I think it will get better. The fear for me is like, so without Austin, LeBron's shot has just not been there. And I thought he started settling last night in a way that I really liked against the Kings. He took two threes because the 3-point shot has just not quite been there for him, unless it's been catch and shoot situations. He took 10 threes last night. And I thought with both players, it was like the combination of the turnovers and the settling for contested threes off the dribble threes, step back threes. That was just, it killed the Lakers offense when they needed to be ascending at that like middle point of the third. But Luka, I also think like it's kind of like once or twice a game now, he's grimacing with his calf or he's grimacing with his groin. He took a couple shots, a couple below the belt shots last night that he went to the locker. We never got clarity as to why he went to the locker room last night at the end of the first quarter and then ended up returning to start the second. But I just feel like Luka hasn't physically looked right, as we've discussed on here. And if Luka's not physically right, he can still be a top 10 player and still be an elite player. But the best version of this Lakers team needs Luka as like a top three player in the world. And I don't think he has been that recently. And that is where if he can't get to that level, LeBron isn't back to being the LeBron of last year. And you don't have Austin. At some point, it's just like the offense isn't good enough. And we know the defense isn't good enough. They just went 29th for the entire month of December in defensive rating. I mean, the defense is a joke right now. So, yeah, they're just in a tough spot.
And I think the two things are connected in a way, too. When the offense is not clicking, that puts your defense in a difficult position, especially with a team that struggles with transition play. I believe the Pistons set a season high for them in fast break points in that game. It was 31 or 33 fast break points for Detroit. They were able to just run down the Lakers. And those, you know, Jason talked about this a few moments ago. Luka, the step back threes that he missed, those are kind of shot turnovers, right? Where it really functionally acts like a turnover. It's a bad shot, not a shot that should be taken. And their margin for error has just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And part of that is, you know, LeBron's play. He's inconsistent night in, night out. I get it. He's 41. You expect, happy birthday, by the way. You expect that some days he's going to have it, some days he's not, right? I mean, Not exactly the best birthday. And maybe it's something with big LeBron days that the Lakers don't play well when it's a big day for LeBron. That's always been a thing. I don't know why. Luka's level not being there. And I think that's also magnified some of the other issues of this team and the overall lack of depth. I mean, the Nick Smith minutes where I was optimistic for Nick. I'm going, okay, here's your chance to step up. And it just wasn't there. That ended up being a disaster. I think it's a lot of things that have combined, but ultimately Luka and LeBron have got to get to another level. And if Luka's banged up and LeBron's, you know, father time will win some, LeBron will win some, you never know, night in, night out, you get into a tough spot. But I'll tell you guys, ultimately, I thought going into last night's game, hey, if they cannot, don't get crushed both on the offensive glass and in the turnover category, and they turned the Pistons over enough. They didn't get crushed in the offensive glass. You can't grab offensive rebounds if you don't miss shots. So that's a factor. But nonetheless, the offensive rebound rate, the Lakers at least kept that under control somewhat for Detroit. Give yourselves a shot. Hey, get this game. Be single digits with in the fourth quarter and give yourselves a shot for LeBron and Luka to take you home. They did that despite not playing particularly well for most of the game. They did that. I was surprised that it was LeBron and Luka that essentially triggered the cataclysmic collapse in the fourth quarter by turning the ball over five times in what felt like 30. It was actually like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, but it felt like in 30 seconds, boom, 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 turnover after turnover after turnover. Jason, if you're not getting those two guys executing at a high level and being the guys that can close out a game for you, this team just, there's not a lot of other options to go to. There's not a lot of other ways for them to win, specifically against this style of team with the athleticism advantage that the Pistons have.
Yeah, the couple of specific things that I noticed that I thought were kind of glaring, the super like high risk passes that both LeBron and Luka were throwing yesterday. So I want to give an example of it working to kind of frame this conversation. So there was a first half post up for LeBron on the left block where he threw kind of like a vertical spacing pass to Jackson cutting down the middle of the lane. And Isaiah Stewart tried to go get it and missed it. And so as a result, Jackson catches it and he dunks it. But like it barely got past Isaiah Stewart. It was like a perfect pass that just barely got over his fingertips. If it's an inch lower, it's probably deflected and running out the other way for a Pistons bucket. Ends up in a dunk. That's an example of a kind of play that like paid off in that instance. But the Lakers, specifically Luka and LeBron, they throw between the two of them like 10 to 12 of those kinds of passes every game. And it's like, you know, later in the game, for example, LeBron tries to force a interior kind of seal pass to Ayton that just gets immediately turned over because there's no seal angle and he's throwing like a rifle pass that has like no chance to get through. Or like Luka's throwing a lob pass to Jared Vanderbilt cutting out of the corner when he's not really a great vertical spacer and his vertical spacing window is tiny and it's really difficult to kind of hit that angled pass. And so like there's just a lot of these like really high degree of difficulty passes there, because you got to look at some of this stuff is like unusual. And so, like the Lakers had like literally like a half dozen pee on their leg moments yesterday where they like got a defensive rebound and then like Jake LaRavia dribbles it off of his foot out of bounds. Yeah. Or like LeBron had a play where he got a defensive rebound to start the fourth quarter and Javonte Green just came over and just took it away from him because he wasn't paying attention. And like there were a bunch of those kinds of things that are like it kind of was a bad night for the Lakers. But there are other ones where it's like, yeah, don't throw that pass. Like, why are you throwing this kick ahead pass up the right wing to LeBron when he's not open and Jalen Duren's jumping it and it's going out the other way? Like there were just so many of these just brain dead passes that I thought were part of how they blew the game open. And the last thing I want to say is like LeBron at this point doesn't really have the ability to break the defense down in any way other than the post. That's like he can do it out of the post and he can do it as a screener for a guard, like we talked about in the Sacramento game with Nick Smith. He can do some stuff there, but like LeBron is very much like most secondary ball handlers in the league. He's flawed and he's not going to be able to break the defense down. Luka right now is so heavily emphasizing the grifting and the step back three in particular that it's taken him out of rhythm on parts of his game that are actually more reliable when he leans on it more. So for instance, like Luka's not driving the basketball this year. His drives are way down. He's getting about 16 per game. He's driving the basketball less often than James Harden is at a very different phase of his career as an older, more beat up, overweight James Harden, right? Like that can't happen. Like I think Luka's becoming so invested in this ref game every single night, trying to bait people into fouls and play basically like twerk along the lane line until someone hits you kind of basketball. And he's countering that with these pull-up threes that he's not making, that he's taking himself out of rhythm on what made him such a dependable scorer when he was at his best, which is short range twos. He usually can get into that 10 to 15 foot range and hit floaters and short jump shots at like 55%. He's really efficient down there and he can get to the point where he cooks teams so relentlessly in that short range that they have no choice but to throw the kitchen sink at him. And that's when he starts picking you apart as a passer. Right now, teams are living with it because they're like, yeah, you're going to get 30, but you're going to have all these grifts that fail, these missed step back threes and these turnovers that are going to give us 19 going the other way. We'll live with that trade-off. It's a trade-off they're willing to live with. But if he can get to the point where he's surgical in that short range again, stop worrying about the refs and stop worrying about trying to get to the foul line so much and worry about making shots, if he does that in that short range, the defense will react in a way that the Lakers can start generating some of those higher quality catch and shoot looks that they've been devoid of in their offense this season. I think there's an approach problem with Luka right now that's actually making things harder for him than it needs to be.
It's approach as well as I think the physical side. You know, his shoulder was an issue. He keeps getting banged up. I think it's the two things combined that are creating some issues here for Luka. He's certainly not playing the way that he did in November, and that's a big concern. And I do think that's bleeding through, because we need to talk about DeAndre Ayton as well a little bit into Ayton's play, where we're not seeing as much out of him. Some of that might be, is he getting the kind of looks that he needs to from Luka and LeBron? Because Ayton is a guy that needs to kind of be fed out there on the floor. But Yovan, we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air here. DeAndre Ayton, this is now both games recently against these kind of big physical teams, and you go back further and you see a similar effect. He's had just 2 rebounds against Houston, 2 rebounds against the Pistons. These are two teams that are two of the very best, historically so, with the Rockets, but the Pistons as well, at on the glass, the offensive glass specifically. These are games where you need a big physical presence from DeAndre Ayton, and he was largely invisible in last night's game. What's the level of concern with DA right now for you, Yovan?
I'm concerned, and I'm specifically concerned in these matchups against the bigger, more athletic, physical teams, because to your point, I thought he clearly had a great start to the season. And looking at through the first 14 games, he had 7 20-plus point games, right? And he was involved at a certain level offensively, had a few 15-plus rebound games. But since then, the production has really tailed off, which is its own thing. But I think looking at, like, since that San Antonio game where we talked about it, I thought he held his own, if not just outright outplayed Victor Wembanyama down the stretch of that game. And I think certainly in the fourth quarter was better than Wemby. Mm-hmm. But over the totality of the game, you could argue outplayed Wemby. And he had some big defensive plays in crunch time in that win. And it was a really, really nice performance. I think arguably his best performance of the season. But since then, the Lakers followed that up going on that road trip where they really struggled and the season took a bit of a left turn. The OKC game, we talked about it after that one. I thought he was really subpar in that OKC game. And then you just look at the games against some of these top teams of the two Phoenix blowouts. I thought he was outplayed by Mark Williams. The Boston game, I thought he was outplayed by Nemes Keita. The San Antonio game, you know, Wemby didn't play, but he did not have a good game in that one. And then these last couple games against Houston and Detroit, having two rebounds in each of those games, didn't get a rebound until the fourth quarter. Like, that can't happen. And I know Detroit was making everything. They were living at the rim, and that's also partly on DeAndre Ayton and his rim protection. But it feels like if we were ranking his five best performances, a majority of those would be against lottery teams or bad defensive teams. If we're looking at his five worst performances, those are all against elite teams, good, big athletic teams where he's getting outplayed by Şengün and Steven Adams and Jalen Duren thoroughly, right? So there was a time earlier in the season where I thought he was, I mean, he's clearly like outkicked his contract to be sure. And that mm-hmm. is undeniable, but the Lakers need more from him. And I think we're starting to see some of the motor concerns that we had heard going into the season play out here. And sure, he could be more involved offensively. Maybe there's a little bit of like, he's not getting the ball as much and he starts to not play as hard, but that, like, he knew what he signed up for. That was always going to be the case of there are going to be some nights you're just not as involved offensively. And can you play with a certain motor and a certain level of physicality in some of these matchups? And the fact that he's not really been able to even hold his own, like, forget out playing those guys, at least hold your own. It's been very, in my opinion, like, decisive in terms of who have been the better centers in these head-to-head matchups. And I think that's been a concerning trend going on, you know, month and a half now.
Here's a stark stat here. DeAndre Ayton in Lakers wins, 17 points, 9.8 rebounds. DeAndre Ayton in Lakers losses, 10.4 points, 6.5 rebounds. When they lose, and he's, by the way, he's shooting 29% from the free throw line in losses, which I think is a bizarre stat, but still, like, the numbers across the board are significantly worse when the Lakers lose. And that suggests that there are games where he's switched on and you're getting the engine is running and running high version of DeAndre Ayton. And in these losses, he's one of the guys that will let go of the rope and go into coast mode. And I think the stats bear that out. Jason, what does this mean for the Lakers? As the super chat comes in, said the Lakers need some speedboats and we've got too many low motor cruisers. The fact that Ayton does go into cruise mode so often, and in particular in the big matchups where the Lakers really need him, does that say something about potentially his long-term fit with the club?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little too early just from the standpoint of, like, I think we've talked about this before. I think Ayton very much takes on the personality of the team, and the entire team's in a funk right now. Your best player is playing well below his capability. Your second best player is hurt. Your third best player just played his worst offensive game of the season. Like, the Jake LaRavia keeps getting these completely wide open threes and just can't knock them down. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys are just not playing well right now. And so I think Ayton is going to be the kind of guy that is going to look bad in that sort of environment. That doesn't necessarily mean the things about him aren't true. It just means, like, it's something to keep in mind as we watch the rest of the season. If everyone comes back in February and they make a trade for a small forward and, like, he looks good in a playoff series, I think it's going to be really hard to find a replacement for him that you can bring in to mm-hmm. rectify the situation. But let's just put it this way. Like, if the season ended today and you asked yourself who the starters were going to be around Luka for the future, there's really only one you feel good about right now, and that's Austin Reeves. And so like that, that's if the season ended today. And so like, I think ultimately right now, as we go closer to February, depending on how Ayton looks in the next month, everything's got to be on the table. I've seen versions of trades that have been thrown around with centers that I think you kind of have to consider now after what we've seen with Ayton against some of these better teams in the league. I think it's at least worth considering when you're looking at team construct moving forward.
Yeah, when Ayton is at his best, he's certainly giving you more bang for your buck than his contract would suggest. But based on how he's played on the season, he may not pick up that player option for next year. If he does, I think great. You know, I think he's still a value on that contract if he's another $8 million or so next season. The question becomes, if suddenly he's going to cost you significantly more than that, do you need to find a player who is a higher motor, a better fit? And finding that guy may not be easy, but I think it's going to be certainly more interesting of a decision for the Lakers long term than we would have been saying, you know, maybe a month ago when it looked like Ayton was kind of playing his way into that job of being potentially the long term fit with Luka. But some issues are starting to rear their head here. I think Ayton in general, when things start going poorly, I was looking for LeBron and Luka to be the guys to say, nope, we're not doing this. We're the superstars. We're putting this team on our backs. We're dragging this team across the finish line. We're digging our heels in the sand. That never happened, but you also don't get that I'm going to grit my teeth and fight through it all out of DeAndre Ayton. And that's not necessarily completely on his shoulders, but fair or unfair, with Austin Reeves out, you need more from him. You need him to have these games where he's going to say, you know what, guys, I've got you. You get beat on the perimeter, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be hustling down the floor, and I'm going to take that leadership role. He is much too willing, in my opinion, to follow along with whatever the vibe of the rest of the team is. And very quickly shut off.
And the concern there too is, like, I think if we are acknowledging the defensive limitations and to some degree the motor limitations of the big three, you need to surround those guys with higher motor players. That's just the reality of the situation. That continues to be why I advocate for Smart or Laravia or Vando or whoever to start in that fifth starter spot, because you need to surround those guys with guys who are trying, and it doesn't matter if they're not getting shots. They're playing with a certain level of energy. They're diving on the ground for loose balls. They're getting back in transition. They're crashing the offensive glass. You need that around the big three. And Ayton has done that at times, but I think not as much recently, especially in the bigger matchups. And we know Rui can struggle in that regard as well. But like, that needs to be like bigger picture, just looking ahead to the future of the Lakers. They need to do a much better job of identifying two-way talent, athletic talent, and guys with a certain motor level, because this group collectively, a bunch of what like, I thought it flew under the radar after the Sacramento game when JJ was talking about Nick Smith Jr. He was like, yeah, we have a bunch of guys on this roster that are only really good at like one thing. And it was in a positive context, but I kind of was like, hey, he's sort of right. Like, there's a lot of specialists on this team. They need better two-way, you know, well-rounded players, but they also need guys with a certain athleticism and motor level. And the thing with motor is, motor should not be something you're turning on and off, whether you're getting the ball or how the team's playing. Like, you need guys who show up every single night with a certain level of intensity, regardless of the context of everything else. It needs to be like, this is my job. This is how I play. This is in my DNA. And the Lakers just don't have a lot of those guys. And I think they do have a few of them, and they need to lean into them a bit more. But the other guys, like, that's where the questions start to arise of, do they fit long term if they're not going to have a certain motor level?
Yeah. Agreed. It's what you have to have building this team moving forward. You have to have that around, whether it's around Luka and Austin, around just Luka, whatever it is, you've got to have that. All right. We did want to make sure we spent enough time going into fan questions and comments on this show. We're going to get to that in just one moment. Want to give a quick shout out to Underdog, which is our presenting sponsor for this episode. We certainly do appreciate them. Hey, California residents, Underdog is out here giving you more ways to play. You already know their player picks pick higher or lower on player stats. Now prediction markets are live for you. You can now pick spreads, totals, or game outcomes, combined with player picks for bigger payouts. New customers play $5 on fantasy, get $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you use our code COLLECTIVE. Team picks, player picks, all on Underdog. And don't forget, use that promo code COLLECTIVE, play $5 on fantasy, and get $75 in fantasy bonus entries. Big thank you to Underdog for sponsoring our show. All right. Again, thank you to Underdog for sponsoring today's episode. We appreciate them. You guys go check them out. Use the link in the description down below. All right. Let's get into some of our chat questions and comments here. You guys keep the questions coming. This one says, if we had Austin, we obviously beat the Pistons. Relax and let Rob make the final move before he's fired. Stop our coach. I don't know how much of this is serious. Is this trolling? I don't, Jason, help me out.
This is like a Mad Libs going in like a completely. I didn't know where this was going to go.
I think they need to decide whether or not they're going to commit to Rob. Like, if Rob's the guy, let him do this whole thing. But I don't understand the point of letting him run a trade cycle if he's not the guy to run the team for the future. Like, this is so bad. This is so bad. Like, they look so bad juxtaposed with the rest of the league in terms of their role player talent that it's like glaring and kind of unacceptable if you look around at what the rest of the league has. And they just need to decide whether or not they're going, like, if the idea is we don't think Rob's the problem, so be it. But like, if he is, they need to move sooner than later. Cause there have been like a dozen different moves over the course of the last few years that have led to this point, and they're dreadfully deficient in two of the most important categories for modern NBA success.
Here's what gets me, and this is perhaps the terrifying part, is that when you look at the moves that were made last summer, Adu Thiro, the jury's out. We don't know. He's young. He's a kid. He's going to take time, whatever. But Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia, DeAndre Ayton, all three of those signings have, to varying degrees, hit or been at least relatively successful, right? They've been important role players for this team. Three guys, you went 3 for 3, essentially, and guys that you at least say are rotation players, and you still look very, very thin. That is concerning, that those three guys largely hit and are still, and you're still looking like your roster doesn't have the depth of most teams around the league.
There's just a glaring athleticism deficit. Like that's the thing that it kind of comes back to that for me with a lot of things where it just feels like that's almost what it felt like last night. Was like eventually the dam was going to break where LA was able to remain competitive despite that deficit for a certain amount of time. And then it eventually was just like almost like a war movie, in like the 1800s or whatever, 1700s. And the Pistons were attacking the castle, and eventually they broke through the castle door. Right. And it feels like that is inevitable. Cause the fact of the matter is like the Lakers tend to have these stretches where they just let go of the rope for 4 to 5 minutes. And like, that's the difference in the game, right? Like OKC, it was like that late first, early second stretch. Houston, it was the beginning of the game, and then the beginning of the third quarter with the Phoenix game, a week or so ago, it was that third quarter where they just got shredded. It's like they have these just like 5 minute stretches where they get absolutely blitzed. And the other part of the game, like that, they're relatively competitive. They're in it largely because of their offense, but they have these 5 minute stretches, which are like the worst in basketball, especially for any good team. And I don't know. I think they got to figure that out.
Real quick, Mamadou said, Trev, you skipped mine. I saw it before the show because it came in before the show went live. It actually didn't stay in our system. So if you can reply again with your super chat question, you don't have to super chat it, obviously, but just put it back in the chat, and that way we can address it. So I just want to make sure we do get to that. All right, let's go. Oh, as far as stop scapegoating our coach. So for those who have been,
I don't even think we criticized JJ today.
No, I don't think we, I think that he could be talking about just kind of the general conversation around the team. But is there any criticism on this team right now that's not fair at this point?
anytime you have this disappointing of a set of outcomes, it's usually more than one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, my thing, I prefer to focus on the stars because they're the guys that have the ability to rectify most situations. Like I know Luka can play better. I'm not sure Jake's going to become a knockdown catch and shoot player this year. You know, I know LeBron can play better. I'm not sure DeAndre Ayton's going to become a reliable anchor center this year. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't really blame JJ for what's been happening to the team over the last few weeks.
All right, let's go. Mamba Mentality said, I've been trying to deflect on X that we're desperate for a trade. Not working. Teams know we are. What do we do? Do we give in to their demands, give all the assets for just key role players? Oh, yeah. I mean, if I'm any other team and you're like, oh, you want what should be like the seventh or eighth guy on a team, we'll take that future first. You guys got to do something. I'm demanding the world from the Lakers right now. If I'm another team. Now, it doesn't mean the Lakers have to give in and give that up, but you know, one of the questions that, and we can use this to kind of get into it, is this just a gap year for the Lakers? And if so, what does that mean? If they are incapable of beating these hyper-athletic teams and finding the pieces you need to beat the hyper-athletic teams is a very difficult task at the trade deadline, is this a gap year? And what? How should that inform their decision-making if so?
Starting to feel that way, to be completely honest. I didn't think we'd get to this point this early in the season. So like it's tough because I actually like coming off of or going into last night thought we would maybe be discussing like OKC has been beaten now three times by San Antonio in the last 3 weeks. And it's like, hey, they bleed, that they're beatable. Mm-hmm. That this is not this they still might, you know, contend for the win record and whatnot, but still will be in the 70 win mix. But this is not necessarily this unbeatable juggernaut. Then you have Denver, who just lost Jokic. They're now down four starters for the foreseeable future. They're almost certainly going to skid into the play-in mix, or at least that borderline. So it felt like right now that there's this opening in the West for the Lakers, but I don't feel any better about the Lakers and their odds in the West, you know, right now than I did, you know, a few days ago or whatnot. Like nothing has really changed. And this is where it is starting to feel like maybe this is a gap year, especially if they just went 5-7 in December. They do have a bit of an easier stretch here in terms of opponent. It's tough in terms of volume of games. I believe they play 16 games in the month of January. They have the Grammy trip starting a little bit earlier than normal in like that beginning of the 20s section of January. So this could spiral a bit, especially with no Austin and with no Rui and just how the team has been playing recently. But I think it. I want to see what the next month looks like. And then going into like maybe the final week of the trade deadline, see who's available, who are the sellers, see where the Lakers are at, how have they been playing, how have they looked against better teams, and then make that decision. I think it's premature to deem the season over right now,
yeah.
But it's obviously not trending in the right direction. And it is like they can, like, again, coming off of last night, only playoff team in either conference with a negative point differential, a negative net rating. They are now tied for third most 20 point losses this season, and actually have triple the amount of 20 point losses as they do 20 point wins. They have 6 20 point losses, 2 20 point wins. They have more 20 point losses than the Thunder, Nuggets, or Rockets have double digit losses. Just let that sink in for a second. Like they are losing in a fashion that, again, they're there record wise, but they are getting killed in a way that's just very alarming. So I'm not quite there with the gap year, but I do think it's starting to trend that way. And depending on where we're at a month from now, I think it's certainly in play.
I think they saw how many people were trumpeting the Thunder for not having to play Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in fourth quarters of games and said, hey, we can do that too. We just have another way to get there.
I will say this. The one thing I think is pretty...
They still play.
They still play.
That's the other thing. Is like, JJ will still play them in the fourth quarter down 20.
I think the one thing that has been made abundantly clear this year is that this team is not worthy of a win now trade. I think that's... I think that the even if some things swung their way. So for instance, like when I talk about like Luka playing better, LeBron playing better, Austin getting healthy, I think that helps them win regular season games. I think that that allows them to do better in the standings in the Western Conference. But like these athleticism and shooting deficits are a death sentence when they get to the postseason and they start playing against great teams over the course of 2 weeks. So like, as far as I'm concerned, every trade slash buyout slash whatever it is you do the rest of the season to tweak the roster has to be geared around what would be beneficial in the long run. So that doesn't mean you don't make a trade this year. It just means any trade you make has to be viewed through the lens of what helps you compete 2-3 years from now. Because I do think that this team has shown enough to demonstrate that a win now type of deal is pointless.
Spot on. Yep. 100%. Everything has to be done through the lens of, does this push you further along the path of becoming the team they ultimately need to be, knowing that you're not going to magically get there by this postseason? Mamadou's super chat that got removed by the system was saying, I was saying that defense isn't the only problem we lack there. Yeah. I agree. You know, I think we've touched upon that quite a bit, but yeah, I think they've got more. It's more than just their defense that is causing issues for the Lakers right now. And that's how you wind up with the numbers that Jovan's talking about. Wind up that, you know, if you struggle defensively, obviously it's a big deal and the Lakers have mightily struggled defensively, but it's more than just that. It takes a lot of things coming together in order to create that type of losses that we're talking about, these blowout, just crushing losses.
Yeah, their half-court offense used to be their ace in the hole. They won games. They were 20-11 despite how poor they are in these other areas because they had this elite half-court offense. But their half-court offense has fallen off of a cliff in the last few weeks, which is on the Stars.
Let's go here. Luka's last memory of his last team is going to the finals. If we get first-rounded, so out in the first round, all 3 years before his contract is up, could he leave?
Okay, hold on. Luka's last memory of his last team is not making the finals. It is them trading him in the middle of the night while he's asleep. And then body shaming him for the next like 3 months. So I don't know that I agree with the premise of this question.
Yeah.
But to this point, like obviously the Mavs built a much better roster in terms of, I mean, you could argue just better roster, but certainly better fitting roster around Luka. He did go to the conference finals in 2022. He did go to the finals in 2024. And it feels like the Lakers have not tried to adapt that blueprint to the degree that they could have, because again, one thing that kind of flies under the radar because it's just time has passed. Like they could have made trades in the offseason and they chose not to, right? And they didn't want to put the pick on the table necessarily. And they didn't want to trade Rui or trade Gabe or like they wanted to go into the season with those guys. So they could have done moves to make this a better fitting roster around Luka. They chose not to. And now, like, yeah, you hit these singles or doubles with Laravia, Smart, and Ayton, but it's not enough. And clearly it's not enough. So I mean, he is under contract for a few more years. I don't think that's going to change in terms of him like asking out. I got that question last night. I don't think he's going to be asking out anytime soon, but I think the more likely thing is just them making drastic changes around him and really reshaping this roster around him.
I don't think that it's, you know, emergency situation at all, but the reality is Luka can be a free agent in 2028. We're about to turn to 2026 here. We're hours away. If next season does not go swimmingly, the summer of 2027, and we're projecting forward here, hopefully this is not the world we're living in. Hopefully next season they've got this badass roster of athletes around Luka, or at least enough to where you've got a team that can really make some noise. And I think they're going to do everything they can to try to make that happen. But if they don't, the summer of 2027, with a player option coming in 2028, Luka would suddenly have a lot of power in influencing a destination if he wanted to leave. So it's not like emergency, oh my gosh, he can be a free agent this summer. We'd better figure out a way to win right now. But it's also not as far off as it might feel like, where Luka could have the opportunity to, if not just leave outright in a couple of years, he could very well direct his destination next. So the same way we're having conversations about Giannis right now and his ability to leave. Again, not saying that he's going to, not saying that's what I'm expecting to happen here, but if things completely crater for some reason over the next year and a half, there could be some, well, I mean, I guess to steal a JJ Redick phrase, so some uncomfortable conversations there. All right, let's go here. Matt said, I agree with Jason. January is going to be rough.
I hope not. By the way, a quick stat here to drive this point home. The Lakers have a 107 offensive rating in the half court this season when Austin Reeves is on the floor. When he's off the floor, it falls all the way down to 99.6. I think one of the big things with Austin is he drives the basketball. Mm-hmm. He gets paint touches. And I think with him being out, obviously old LeBron's, you know, he's had games where he's done it well, but he struggled to do it. And Luke has just been doing so much settling. I think they've just really, really missed Austin.
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly been part of this. Absolutely. Absolutely been a big piece here.
I didn't say it. It wasn't me.
Christopher says, need to stop always trying to trade picks and start thinking of who to draft and develop. Laker fans lack patience in building a team. That's a problem. So when we talk about the players the Lakers need, you think about, you know, athletes that can defend multiple positions, whether it's at the guard, the wing, wherever. You need guys who could shoot. The challenge is that's at the top of the list for literally every team. What are you looking for? Athletes who could defend multiple positions and shoot, especially with the way teams are defending. And this season, it's becoming, with the Thunder winning, it's copycat league. You've got even more teams that are really trying to put perimeter pressure up. The depth of your roster, I think, is significantly more important as well. Those types of players, teams do not let them go because there's a scarcity of them. And everyone is looking for them. Everyone wants to play. Even the teams that have a ton of them want more of that type of player. We may be in an NBA market where the best shot at finding one of those guys, because they're so hard to get, is via the draft. And that's a difficult spot to be in, to try to find those guys when you've got a superstar in Luka in his prime right now. Now, that's not to say it's impossible to get those guys. Other GMs have done it. Adapt and overcome. You've got to find a way to get it done. But again, this is the most difficult type of player to find right now in the NBA, aside from a true superstar. And that, I think, presents some real challenges for a Lakers team that has missed on a lot of their draft picks, too, that maybe could have become this type of player.
So I actually disagree with I think that if you are channeling together a bunch of like mid first round picks, you can find some opportunity there for a guy who can play some rotation minutes. Like, I think there are certain teams that have to do that, specifically teams like OKC that are going to end up with like three massive max contracts on their roster here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. I think for a team like the Lakers, I mean, we were just talking about the urgency surrounding Luka and his potential contract, right? Like, and Jovan's been all over this in our pods this season. Like, there's a certain amount of like, it's not necessarily win now, but it's like an appease Luka now kind of thing, where like, if you just put a bad team around Luka, why would he want to stay and play here? Right. So I think there's a little bit of like a kind of an urgency surrounding that. And part of the issue is, it's like, we talked about this with Max Christie, and Adu Thiero is a good example. Most of the guys you draft aren't ready to contribute in a, mm-hmm. in a real way right away. I think the way that I would put this together is, this is where the Lakers not having a pro personnel scouting department is a real problem, because what they need to do is they need to find guys that are in their early to mid 20s around the league that are being undervalued elsewhere that can fit what the Lakers need, and target bringing those guys in so they're actually ready to play right away. And then when you're drafting, you almost can't take the tantalizing potential guy like Adu Thiero. You almost have to take the guy that's more of a known commodity, third, fourth year player in college who can come in and play right away under the circumstances that they're dealing with Luka entering his prime right now. So I think there's certain stuff surrounding Luka's prime where like you have to draft older guys, and you have to look for pro personnel out there that is undervalued that you can bring in to support your current situation. I think the issue is that they're not doing a good job evaluating talent around the league.
Do you have any players on off top of your head? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but that would fit that bill that you're talking about, that are what the Lakers need in terms of athleticism, defense, but are being undervalued.
We've talked about, like a dozen of them around the league from various teams, whether it's Josh Green, whether it's Justin Champagne out of Washington, or it's who's the wing from Toronto that I'm forgetting, the one who played for
Agbaji.
Agbaji is another example. There's these guys are all around the league, and ultimately, as you watch, like the who's the young wing that's off the bench for New Orleans that I brought up a couple weeks ago too.
Was it Sadiq Bey?
No, I actually like Sadiq Bey too, though. He's another option, but I'm blanking on him. He's the like 6'4", like athletic wing that can shoot. Killed the Lakers when they played against him, but he's been playing pretty well off the bench for him. Let me pull it up so I don't forget here. But these guys are all around the league.
It's not Jordan Hawkins, right?
No. It is Bryce McGowan's.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That's yeah. Right. But like I watch them around the league and I'm like, it's just, you're just sitting there and you're like literally yesterday, Marcus Sasser, you're just sitting there and you're like, this guy's out of the rotation who hops into the rotation to play because Caris LeVert's out of the lineup. And by the way, like Caris LeVert's a classic example of the kind of guy, like these guys are out there. You can get them on the mid-level exception. And it's like, here's a guy that can defend twos and threes pretty well, slides his feet well, and can dribble drive the basketball. But like Caris LeVert slides out of the lineup. Here comes Marcus Sasser. He's kicking the shit out of Nick Smith Jr. on national television for the world to see. He's one of the guys that was driving a bunch of their dribble penetration down the stretch. And it's like, they're all around the league. They're the fast guards that can, fast wings that can dribble a little bit, shoot a little bit, pass a little bit. And again, there's a certain amount of like, there's actually a little bit of a surplus of these guys around the league. There's a lot of them that are out of rotations, but they're not being used because that team already has five or six guys that do that. And so that guy's not being utilized. But on a Laker team, they would be immediately impactful because of the fact that that team has a need for that specific skill set.
A couple of just quick follow-ups here. I think, one, we have to remember, like, Luka's about to be 27, and he's about to be entering his prime. So I think the notion, I understand, I don't think the Lakers should just trade picks just to trade picks, and it has to be, as Jason said earlier, I think ideally a player who could help you in the now and fit with the future timeline with Luka and Austin and whatnot. But there should be some urgency here of Luka has already shown he could take a team to the Western Conference Finals and the finals. So you don't want to just punt on the next couple seasons and be like, hey, we're going to build a great 2028, 2029 team around 29 or 30-year-old Luka Doncic. Like, no, you want to have that team in place for next season, ideally, right? So if you can't do that, then 2027, 28 at the latest. But even then, now you've almost wasted like 2.5 years with Luka going into that season. And that's just too many for a player of his caliber. So I understand, like, I think two things can be true at once. Like, you do need to have a certain level of patience with not, like, the Lakers have gotten into this mess in part by making some rash moves, most notably the Westbrook trade. But you also need to have some urgency here of you can't keep kicking the can down the road like they love doing and saying, well, we'll have 3 picks next summer. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, wait, we'll have 4 picks the year after that. Oh, wait, we'll have 5 picks. Like, it's like you can't keep doing that. But the other thing here that I think is flown under the radar in terms of how bad their picks have been recently has also been the player archetypes that they have targeted. Because one thing I thought at the time and have just feel like it's crystallized in retrospect has been like, even if JHS hit, for example, JHS was going to have a certain limitation in the rotation just because they already had LeBron and AD as the two stars and assuming a certain amount of usage. Austin was ascending. You already had D'Lo. Then you signed Gabe Vincent that same summer that they added JHS. So it was like, where was JHS going to play? What was the upside scenario for JHS? And like, he was just a scoring guard who you already had a lot of offensive firepower, you and offensive minded perimeter guys. You didn't need another scoring guard. And even with Dalton, I get that, like, he was a projected top 10 guy. He was supposed to go at a certain spot. So like, he falls, there's a value play, but we knew he was an older prospect, which a lot of teams are lower on just because of the age. Mm-hmm. There's some defensive concerns with him. And again, like, the Lakers could use a shooter for sure. I'm not denying that, but ideally a shooter with a certain level of defense. And looking at some of the guys that went directly after Dalton, like, imagine Tristan Da Silva on this team. And that was a guy the Lakers were really interested in. I think might've picked him had Dalton not been there. It's just like, they have needed 3-and-D guys. And yes, they finally attempted that with a duo, but that was also with a second round pick when you had back to back top 20 first round picks and you went with offensive minded players with questionable defense and really just questionable paths to like a rotation spot. That I think has been like a macro issue for them the last few years with the drafting has been, I just think they're identifying the wrong types of players of, again, even if those guys hit, they're mainly hitting on the offensive side and you still needed more athleticism, defense, 3-and-D type guys, and you didn't draft them. And then there were several players directly after those guys who checked those boxes you didn't pick.
Especially after the selection of Max Christie, when he went, and they found him in the second round. But when you thought, okay, here's the clear path towards him becoming a valuable player in the NBA because what we project he'll be able to do defensively, what we project, now it takes time, but what we project he'll be able to do offensively as well in terms of spacing the floor, being a multi-position defensive player, that type of thing. And Adu Thiro is more along those lines as well. But you're right, Jovan, they've been targeting guys that if they do hit, especially now with Luka on the roster, don't necessarily check the boxes that they need that those players to check. And that's a concerning thing as well for this. And part of the reason why, when we look at the team, why does it feel like there's like three players missing from this team at all? Even when they're fully healthy, it feels like there's just skill sets that are not here that other teams have. It's in part because of those choices they've been making in the draft lately. Let me get to this next one. It's a wild stat, but it's true. Vando has the highest three-point percentage by a Laker in December. Yep. Jared Vanderbilt, 52.6% from three in the month of December. Now, that's on 2.4 attempts per game in eight games. So very much small sample size territory. But at least as one, like, silver lining, it's been kind of a feel-good thing to see Jared Vanderbilt knocking down threes with some consistency over the last month plus here.
The form looked good.
Agreed. Like, it's making him more, like, far more playable now. Like, yeah. This is what you need. It is low volume, right? So there is a big difference between shooting that on two attempts, two and a half attempts versus four attempts versus six attempts. Like, you know, if he scales up, I do think that percentage would obviously decrease. But the fact that he is making teams pay for helping off of him, and I just think he's playing really well right now, and he's making those shots and making teams pay, and he hit a couple timely ones last night in the first half. So yeah, really nice play from Vando.
All right, BT Kingsley said, oddly enough, we can now see how bad we are without Austin Reeves.
I think his value has been screaming off the screen in these games without when he's been out.
What do you think they do? Jovan, I'll throw this to you. What do you think they do contractually with Austin next summer? Obviously, we've got a lot of basketball left to play. The playoffs are a big part of this too. But let's assume Austin plays at, take what we've seen so far and assume he stays roughly at that level when he gets back to full health from here on out. What do they do in terms of the kind of contract that they offer him? Do they get cute with the deal and try to get him to take less? Do they just say, hey, we're going to, because you know other teams are going to be making the call to Austin Reeves as well. How do you see the Lakers handling that situation?
I think there's still a lot of time for this to play out, where, again, if we were having the conversation with Ayton more recently, I think that has changed in terms of his potential value or his potential long-term fit with this group. So I think you can probably say a similar thing with Austin, depending on how the rest of the season goes, where if they lose in the first round and Austin doesn't have a good first round performance, I think the pitchforks will be out and the anti-Austin crowd will be louder than ever. And there will be some legitimacy to it of maybe there just is a limitation here in terms of how Austin and Luka can fit together in a potential playoff series or with a certain roster build. But I mean, if you're asking me to make a prediction, I would expect that he gets the max on a 4-year max deal. Maybe he gets, maybe he does take a slight hometown discount. I think it would probably, like, the thing with him in terms of order of operations is he does have a much lower cap hold. So yeah, the Lakers can keep him on that cap hold and then conduct their business and then come back to Austin and sign him to the deal. So I think if they present him with the right, hey, we can trade for this guy, or hey, we could sign this guy with the non-taxpayer or even with cap space, if you shave off a few million dollars, I think that's something that he would entertain, especially assuming the Lakers are coming correct and even saying, like, we can give you the max if you want. It's just like, if you take a little bit of a discount, this can help facilitate this. I think Austin is a team guy and would consider that. But I think, I mean, I would say 38 is probably the floor here, because again, I know people hear max and they start, like, the antenna goes up, but it's max, yep, for like the constraints of his situation. This is not a $60 million max. This is not a $50 million max. And if the Lakers get too cute with it and they're like, hey, we'll only give you 35, he's just going to leave and go get that money elsewhere, because there will be multiple teams lining up to give him a max contract. So I think, again, regardless of your opinion of Austin, the shrewd move is to re-sign him and then continue to evaluate and potentially flip him next season if you want to do that. But I do think it's going to end up being a max deal, or maybe a slight decrease if, again, there's a move that makes sense.
And so far, the numbers have all suggested the path forward is with Austin and Luka together as a duo. We'll see if, you know, how the rest of the season plays out. Of course, a big part of it will be how the playoffs play out. But also, one of the things that I want to note, a lot of people, whenever I've brought up that concept of, well, Austin Reaves has a cap hold, you can take care of him last, there's been a little bit of nervousness of, well, what does that mean, that he's unsigned out there? Teams are going to go, you know, teams will steal him away. Then, you know, you come to terms with him. You still have the conversation with him. You just don't actually ink the contract until you've got these other moves done. It's just an order of operations thing. That's all it would be. It doesn't mean you go do all this other shopping and then go, oh, okay, Austin, I guess we'll get to you now and figure it out. You have the conversation ahead of time. You figure all that out, get everything done, and then you actually put pen to paper once the other moves are completed. And that's how you take advantage of the lower cap hold sitting at your book on your books. Then you go over the cap to sign him to that contract using bird rights. So that's the way the Lakers would execute that. All right, let's go here. Senpai said, has there been any lineup that's looked better than the DFS at the five lineup, the small ball lineup that the Lakers used and they love so much that they used it for an entire half? Feels like a small ball defensive five is being overlooked. Ayton is just mid. I noted this the other day that there were some positive stats from the Lakers when they have been playing smaller. I don't know what they look like over the last, say, three games or so. But the smaller lineups did show some promise in a limited sample size. Then JJ did have his quote in his presser about, you know, you can't look at 11 minutes of play and assume small ball works or something like that. Should it be something they attempt more situationally? Of course, there's some lineups where you cannot use it against, but should that be something they're more open to?
Possibly when you have an issue with Luka driving the basketball. I think that anything you can do to try to promote paint touches for this team, I think, is worth exploring. At this point, though, like, there's a vertical spacing element with having Ayton available and with Jackson on the floor that I think is important to the offense. I don't think you bail on it. It's more just, I'm always a proponent of having different looks. And I think at this point, this team has been struggling to get paint touches since Austin left, and I think spacing the floor a little bit more could certainly help.
Yeah, I don't mind seeing something like that and giving that floor spacing a look if they can, especially if Ayton is not being effective.
It doesn't really matter, though, if it's going to be like Kleba and he can't shoot, or if it's going to be Vando. Yeah. You know, like, part of the issue is that the Lakers can't space the floor under any circumstances.
Jovan, a question addressed to you. Is it possible for the Lakers to trade for Wiggins, Rob Williams, and Quentin Grimes? I would love to get Lopez from the Clippers.
No, I mean, that's a combined,
that's a lot,
roughly $49 million across those three guys. The Lakers, even if you're putting Rui on the table, that's between Rui, Maxi, and Gabe, you're getting into like the low 40s. And then, you know, Dalton doesn't get you there. Adu doesn't get you there. Vando could, I mean, I guess if you're trading Rui, Vando, Gabe, and Maxi, you get in the mix. But I don't see why Miami or Portland or Philly would take on Vando's contract. That doesn't really make sense, especially assuming that you're giving up the first round pick here either to Miami or to Philly for Wiggins or Grimes, and presumably Wiggins. I don't see them being like, oh yeah, we'll take Vando in as a throw in. Like, I know Vando's played better, but when I continue to have conversations, he is still viewed in a negative sense from like a trade value perspective. So he's got two more years left. And I think people want to see this shooting and this stretch of basketball last a lot more than like a few weeks. Like I think the ideal scenario with Vando would be like, he plays this well for the rest of the season. And then the off season, you might be able to flip him for something else. Mm-hmm. But I don't think a few good weeks of Jared Vanderbilt basketball is going to offset the damage that's been done to his reputation in the last couple of years. So I still think that's in a tough spot. Lopez was a target for the Lakers if they didn't end up getting DeAndre Ayton. It was Lopez or Capella. But I don't see that necessarily happening with, I mean, Lopez has been playing well for the Clippers, that they're on a 5-game win streak. They need him right now with Zubats out. I think you could talk yourself into individually one of the Wiggins, Williams, or Grimes guys, maybe even two of them, but it would be next to impossible, I think, to get all three just because of both LA's contracts and draft assets.
All right, we're going to do a couple more here. I will save any of the super chats we don't get to real quick. Doug, not Dave McMenamin. Proud of my Pistons. 8 wins 2 years ago. Yeah, the Pistons are a lot of fun. I really enjoy watching them play. They fly up and down the floor, and they compete every single possession. JJ was not happy with how much the Pistons foul, but if you're a Pistons fan, you got to be loving life right now in the way this team is played and the way they bring it every single night and really get after you. They've been a lot of fun to watch this year.
Another team that's driving a lot of success by having like a half dozen dudes who can really guard the ball.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
And the Lakers have bagel of those dudes. Maybe one if you count Vando.
All right, let's go here to finish things out. What is the likelihood of Rob being fired in 2026? Whether it's before the deadline or in the summer, he's so incompetent. I don't see this franchise touching even a grain's worth of success till he's gone. We do have new ownership in place with Mark Walter. Sometimes new ownership means bringing in their own people, but Rob also got contract extension recently. I don't know. Where are we at on Rob in terms of how hot the seat is? Obviously, the recent stretch of play is going to bring up that topic a bit more, though he is the guy who just traded for Luka less than a year ago.
Jason just had a video on this.
I think there's some chance it happens in the summer if they get embarrassed. Like if they lose in the first mm-hmm. round in five and they finish the season with like 48 wins. Yeah, I think there's a chance. But like I've been thinking that he's the wrong guy for a long time and just nothing ever happens. So
I think it's a pretty low chance just because of the contract extension. And I made this point last night on my show, but I mean, they started these talks with Mark Walter in January, and I would have a tough time seeing them extending Rob and JJ without the blessing of Mark Walter. Like I compared it to, you don't just like get into escrow and like you are selling a house and then you're like, let me just paint this wall like hot pink right before you sell the house. It's like, no, if you're going to make any changes to the house, you're going to run it by the new prospective owner. And that is the same thing with Mark Walter. I do not see him, you know, any scenario in which he did not sign off on the Rob and JJ extensions. Now, could he change his mind? Of course, that there's room for him, you know, some flexibility there. But I would have a tough time seeing him sign off on that and then less than a year later let Rob go and then have to pay that out for the next few years. I think he's going to get more leeway into that 2026-27 season. But then if that doesn't go as well, I think that could be the season where maybe that potentially happens. But I noted this last week. Dave McMenamin reported that he's heard that Rob and JJ are going to be part of the Lakers for the next 5 years. And that obviously is in line with their extension. So it does not seem like those two are on the hot seat whatsoever right now. And just making that of what it is, like, yeah, I think he's going to be here probably at least until 2027. And then depending on where the roster is at, how they performed, how Luka feels about things, I think we can't overlook that part of it of, you know, Luka is the guy now. And if Luka's not happy, then the Lakers have to make changes around that. That could be a different discussion in 2027, but I think he's probably here through the next year at least.
No, I agree with everything you said there, Jovan. I think as much as fans right now, everybody right now, we're in they're playing bad basketball. They're providing a bad experience for Lakers fans. It's everybody needs to go get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy. You know, heads need to roll, all that kind of stuff. But I do think you're right about the way this is ultimately going to play out. I will say one thing that we could see change with Mark Walter coming in. You look at the way the Dodgers have operated and they've said, hey, you know what? Let's find smart baseball people. Let's bring them in and we will find ways for them to make an impact for our club. We will find opportunities for them. We could see the Lakers front office beefed up in that way. We could see their analytics department beefed up in that way. Rob may still be the guy, but we may see more voices coming in. That's at least my hope anyway, that we do see, you know, Jason, you were talking about the scout team. Seeing Mark Walter's impact made in those areas where you may not necessarily have a change in terms of Rob Pelinka out, but more smart basketball people getting involved in the organization. That's been, to my understanding, I'm not an expert on the Dodgers, but the Dodgers guys that I've talked to, how they've essentially approached things. I wouldn't mind seeing an approach like that with the Lakers as well. Hey, let's get smart. Rather than, hey, Jerry West wants to come back. No, we don't need you. Let's bring in all the smart basketball people we can find and find ways to utilize that. All right, everybody. Appreciate all of you for coming in. Super chats that we did not get to, I do have them saved. I'll make sure we do address them. I did a question and answer session yesterday and got to a bunch of them. I'll make sure that we do get to them. We do appreciate all of those that have been coming in. But guys, you know, I want to finish off just by saying a very happy new year to everybody out there, everybody that has supported the show, everybody that's been here from the beginning. Appreciate all of you. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do subscribe to the channel. And Jovan, Jason, guys, happy new year to both of you as well.
Happy new year to you guys. Hopefully we'll have something better to talk about on Monday.
Hope so.
Happy new year, guys. Happy new year to the chat. And we'll talk to you guys next year.
That's right. See you next year, everybody. Till then, see ya and stay safe.